On today's show, we are previewing the Cavs wing group, perhaps the most in-question group on the entire roster. Want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. That includes YouTube. Please subscribe if you have not already.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
The music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and Espation for the Sword. That man on the other side is Evan Damrell, primarily at Meta's Write It Down Euclid. Evan, we're going to talk about Cavs wing stuff today, and I think where to start is that I think if we're thinking about this group, thinking about Caris LeVert and Isaac Okoro and Jetty Osman and Lamar Stevens and Dylan Windler, this is a group to me that really has to prove that it's good, that it has depth, that there is something there. I think all of these guys have some clear flaws, and I think that's kind of a tricky place to be. And there's less pressure on them post-Mitchell trade in a lot of ways. But this is a group that I think still brings a lot of question marks if we're talking about how good this Cavs team can be this year.
I mean, I somewhat agree with you when you say that there is some pressure now with Donovan Mitchell in the fold.
Less pressure.
Okay, then we are in agreement then, because prior to the Donovan Mitchell trade, Lauri Markkanen was at least penciled in as the starting three. Maybe the Cavs get weird with it again and relegate Lowry to a bench role at that point, let him be the backup four or five, and let him play some three in spot scenarios too. But it is the biggest question mark on the roster. But when it comes to a wing type player, and JV Bickerstaff kind of hinted at this a little bit, like, they need a guy who can kind of provide energy on both ends of the floor, and is a guy who's comfortable being more on the fifth option in the starting lineup and a low usage guy in the grand scheme of things, where they're primarily playing off the ball. And yeah, you listed all the guys. I think it's coach talk on Bickerstaff's part, but I think it's just an honest thing too. It's like, it is an open competition for the three spot on the Cavs, and it's not even starting. That's just on the depth chart as well, where you have a pretty wide open competition between LeVert, Osman, Okoro, Wade, Windler, et cetera, and so on. Like, even RJ Nembhard, I guess, if you want to get real weird with it, but that's obviously not a possibility at the end of the day. But and Lamar Stevens as well. So, like, there's a lot of guys who could be in the fold and in the mix for this one for the Cavs, but it's not a huge glaring need, because offensively they're going to be hitting so hard because of Garland and Mitchell already. And then you have year two Evan Mobley. You have Jared Allen, who's just going to be feasting off the three-point heavy attack that's going to be coming from the backcourt as well, just off offense, rebounds, and everything. Like, it's an interesting thought exercise, and we touched on it a little bit with Justin Rowan too, but... And we all gave our stance on what our preferred pecking order would be for just the starting three for the Cavs, but there's a lot of questions about this team already. But the three spot, like, it's understandable to think about it because it's the only unknown for the Cavs, but at the same time, like, it's not a super pressing need either if they can find the right player that fits in this kind of new starting lineup they have.
I think Bickerstaff hitting on the point of, like, we need a guy that provides energy on both ends, and is sort of hinting at the idea of, like, you need a guy that can kind of just fill a niche on both ends of the floor. I think, like, this group is just I think what, like, holds me back on this group is that there's not a player here that I think just provides all of that cleanly. I think that was, like, the idea behind the Abaji pick in a lot of ways, right? Even before the Mitchell trade, wing was such a need for this Cavs team. I think we hit on that a lot on the show. I think they openly kind of talked about it. They need a guy who can just shoot threes and play defense and maybe attack closeouts and just function at both ends of the floor and in the ways that are going to accentuate what Mobley does, what Garland does, what Allen does now, what Donovan Mitchell does. There's obviously, like, chatter, you know, about, like, they need that bigger stopper type to handle Durant and throw at Tatum and all these guys. I think like that's less of a concern to me just because you have Evan Mobley. I think you're going to see Mobley do some of that stuff, and he's that special.
Yeah.
I think the pressing need of a consistent off-ball shooter, which we'll get into a lot in segment two. I pulled some numbers for that. And just a guy that can just sort of function cleanly in those spots to do certain things. I think it's like an open question of like, A, which one of these guys is going to be the best option for that this year? And two, you know, how long it takes to figure out? And three, like who like we would say that kind of is? Because I think, all these guys have these little weird things. It's like Okoro has the defensive chops. The shooting is just a problem. Lamar Stevens can be that bigger 3-4 defender and at least compete on that end of the floor. He's a worse shooter than Okoro, right? Like LeVert, they're saying he's apparently keto friendly now, and that's given him some new life, which
he himself said that.
Well, that's like I'm teasing that because this is like Muscle Watch, but this is like new age Muscle Watch. It's like the plant based thing that's been going around the last couple of years. Now we're going keto. I just like eat some oatmeal, man. You'll be fine. Like there's just like all these little things that I just want to see how it develops. Like even like Jetty Osmond, who might be the most willing catch and shoot 3-point shooter. It's like there's also these big glaring issues with him, and you're just like I don't know about any of these guys. And if you're JB Bickerstaff, I wonder how like if you put Trusium into him, like how confident you would really feel that like the answer you're looking for is staring at you right now.
So it's funny you mentioned Jetty in regards to what JB said, because we're recording this on Monday heading into Tuesday, and during media availability, JB said there is some two-way potential in there for Jetty, possibly just as a wing-type player because he's the true wing on Cleveland's roster, but he kind of showed his hand a little bit saying that last season, Jetty was most effective when he was deployed in tandem with Ricky Rubio or the lead guard off the bench just to kind of set him up and get him easy looks on the perimeter. And they kind of want to reutilize that scheme again. And maybe that's showing his hand a little bit to say like, hey, Jetty's in the race for the starting three spot, but we're not like seriously considering it. Like, I think we're going to be looking at deeper other options. And it's interesting you mentioned Okoro as well, where yes, the defensive potential is there, but like the shooting concerns are very real. And JB kind of said to us on Monday as well that like they had to put Isaac in a box last season, which is something you and I have been preaching, just because they had two otherworldly bigs on the interior and they needed spacing, especially when, yes, Markkanen provided you some spacing as well. But like, yeah, if you play Okoro with those two, like you're going to get a lot more cluttered in the paint versus having Lauri Markkanen out there at the three spot as well. So Bickerstaff said now that there's just like more of an established offensive dichotomy, and maybe because Evan Mobley is more of a 3-point shooter, they can afford to play a non-shooter like Isaac Okoro at times out there, where yes, he can hopefully convert on some open looks he gets on the perimeter, but having Jared Allen only being like the true big man mucking up the interior is going to create a lot more lanes for Okoro to slash and operate and act off ball. And yes, Isaac said like, hey, it was like really hard last season just to learn to play off ball. And especially when he's kind of put it in a box, JB's Bickerstaff's words, not either of ours, but I'm interested to see how they utilize him. And I think we'll get a clearer perspective of maybe what does work and what doesn't work when they play Philly on Wednesday to open the preseason.
If I had to ask you this before we go into break, let me ask you, just if there was a guy among this group that you would feel most confident in functioning and kind of providing the Cavs what they need in the clearest way possible, if you had to guess about who that would end up being at the end of the season when we look back at this, who would you guess that player is?
Isaac Okoro, but I'm also just a believer in him. How about you?
I think it's Okoro too. But, like, would it surprise me if it's, like, Dean Wade? No. Would it surprise me if, like, Caris LeVert figures some stuff out and, like, there's a functionality to LeVert that we're not seeing? No. I think it is...
The coward's answer also is the Cavs just swing a trade to get a wing-type player using some of that back-end salary they have on expiring contracts.
That's it. Like, if there is another player... If there is another someone they can get via trade, flipping with some of these contracts, whatever it is, that's probably like the easiest answer. Or else Okoro is the option that makes sense, I think, because he's the one where you can look at him and say there's development still to come here. A guy still improved. It's, I think, overstated that guys when they hit 27, whatever, don't improve. But I think like the bigger jumps obviously historically have happened when you're younger. This is year 3 for Okoro. This is kind of when we're going to find out what he is in a lot of ways. And it's, if there's a leap to come, it's like you would think it might be him, maybe Wade, maybe Lamar Stevens figured out how to shoot. But these are question marks, I think, bigger than anything else. Okay. After the break, we're going to get into the catch and shoot part of this, because the offensive function of these wings, I think, is one of the biggest questions I have in terms of what they'll do, how they'll perform in these roles. We're going to run through some numbers, run through sort of what that would look like in a Donovan Mitchell war, because arguably, I think maybe the catch and shoot need, it looks a little bit different now with Mitchell in tow for the Cavs offense. But first, going to tell everybody our friends at Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you are depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And guess what? They have a new flavor. It's the amazing cookie dough chunk puff. They have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, like all Built Bars, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. All of the joys of eating cookie dough without the hassle of making it, plus it's healthy for you. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein in them. Type in your internet browser really fast and go to built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It will be the perfect treat. Or you can find a really good hiding place and just hoard them for yourself. Like all Built Bars, the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. And they also have feature collagen protein. All Built products have collagen protein. Your body absorbs more efficiently and it provides a ton of health benefits. You're going to love the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff, whether you need a snack for your workout, a late night treat, maybe a mid-game at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse Arena if you're one of us. Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. Ditch the calories, the fat, and the sugar. Grab a Built bar. Go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON15 and get 15% off your order. Again, that promo code is LOCKEDON15. Okay, back here in Lockdown Cavs, I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damerl. Evan, let's run through some catch and shoot numbers.
Sure thing.
Jetty Osmond last year, 4.3 attempts per game, 34.9%. Caris LeVert, this is the weirdest one. 40.6% on 1.6 attempts per game overall, 44.4% on 1.9 per game with the Cavs. That's in 19 games. This is wildly out of line with the rest of his career. If this is like a new Caris LeVert, that's a big deal. If it's just like a weird little blip, I would probably lean that that's the case. Then he goes back to just being kind of as a shooter. Isaac Okoro, 36.8% at 2.1 per game. That is under 1.3 made per game, but a jump from his rookie year. Dean Wade, 36.2% at 2.7 attempts per game, and that's with him having a low corner three percentage. I think he should be good at this. By comparison, Lowry Markkanen last year, 37.1% on 6 attempts per game, so a big jump in volume there. And Kevin Love is at 38.8% on 5.3 attempts per game. So, Evan, I say those numbers, and I say that Donovan Mitchell is going to come in. I think we're going to see him take more catch-and-shoot threes. I think he's going to just take more shots, eat up some of the shots that you're losing from Markkanen. And he's Donovan Mitchell. You feel very good about that. But I still feel like catch and shoot threes are going to just be a function of this group of wings, what their offensive role is going to be. So like, how do you think we should feel about this group of guys as catch and shoot options to take advantage of looks like Garland and Mitchell and perhaps Mobley are creating?
So you mentioned Kevin Love. Let's just rule him out as an option of the three. But other than that, the Caris LeVert thing is actually pretty interesting, because all throughout this training camp process, like whenever LeVert has spoken to the media or JB Bickerstaff's just given some insight on how Caris LeVert's going to kind of function in this offensive scheme, they both really hammered on the fact that catch and shoot three-pointers are going to be something that they really need to add to his shot profile and diet, especially if he is in the starting lineup. And the Cavs want to go with three ball dominant guys in their starting lineup as well, and then two big men who need the ball handed to them by one of those ball dominant guys as well. Like, I understand the multifaceted approach you want to go with, but like you said, this is a real thing, and like a new version of Caris LeVert the Cavs are somehow unlocking, because they have Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell on this team, and they need a guy to make the sacrifice in terms of touches and just kind of be available on the perimeter. That is interesting, because that is kind of the self-actualization and like the ideal thing you need from Caris LeVert even after you acquired him. Like, yes, that's kind of what you needed from him last season when he first came here from the Pacers, but now that he's here and Donovan Mitchell's here as well, like if you get more three-pointers and you also just get a guy who fits that prototypical wing size and can provide you 3-point shooting and also just like maybe a little bit of tertiary playmaking and some defense as well if he's able to just to play and keep his opponent honest on offense. Like that's a good thing as well. But the 3-point shooting stuff is definitely interesting, and I think if it's a real thing, and like you said, it's fascinating. And it's a real thing, and that's something maybe worth monitoring early into the season as well. Like, that could unlock a lot of things for the Cavs, because then you have even more spacing on the floor, which then, in turn, lets your 2 7-footers thrive even more on the interior, or guys who need to slash and attack the basket thrive as well.
So the last time Caris LeVert had, like, what I would say is a good catch-and-shoot 3-point season, let's go back to 2017-18. 36.9% on catch-and-shoot threes versus 31.5% on pull-ups. This was a year he played 69 games. You go to 2018-19.
Nice.
Yeah, there you go. Year after that, 27.3% in 2018-19 in a 40-game season. And I believe of what a 40-game season for him due to injury. 2019-20, he's at 31.6%. 2020-2021, he's at 33%. So, like, they can say all they want about it and be optimistic about it. I think we just need to see it. Like, and this will be something that I think if maybe we should try to do every recap show is be like, okay, Caris LeVert went, you know, 2 of 7 from catching threes. So like what that looks like and how this is breaking out. I kind of track this as we go in real time, because I think it's the swing skill for him in his career right now in a lot of ways. This just like kind of bucks. The other thing I would say about the catch and shoot part of it is I do just wonder, because Mitchell is going to take some, and like he's going to just, by virtue of when he's playing with Garland in particular, get some of these looks in a way he maybe wasn't taking as many in Utah. Like, he's just going to have to be on the ball less. And I think that's good for him. I think that's good for the offense. I'm curious to see like what else they have these guys do. Like, does Okoro have like feel more comfortably darting in from the corner on a cut? Does Stevens, you know, feel comfort in that way? Does Dean Wade, who's a pretty explosive finisher when he's able to get downhill and has a little hop to his game, does he do some of that? Right? Like, what does it look like when they aren't just needing there to space? And like, can you add in some layers of things via that? That's like the other part of this, but it's just like, can these guys make open threes that are going to come their way is like the big question. Yeah. But question two for me would be like, okay, let's just say Mitchell's doing some of this. Maybe Mobley's doing some of this as that added little bonus, that little extra seasoning on that. Does that open the door for some other things and adding in some functionality?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought exercise, because you alluded to it. Like, Donovan Mitchell is going to uptick and soak up a lot of Larry Mark in his 3-point attempts last season. You hope you get similar results from Kevin Love if you're playing with him in lineups as well. Darius Garland obviously is going to get a lot of looks in the perimeter as well, especially when you assume the defensive attention Donovan Mitchell's going to command. But the Evan Mobley factor, like, let's say he comes out shooting threes to start the season, and I asked JB Bickerstaff about this. He said, yeah, if he's open, we want him shooting those attempts and those shots from beyond the arc, because they want him to add it to his shot profile and make it a part of his offensive repertoire. And like, if he is a respectable 3-point shooter early into the season, again, like, you could play Mobley at the 5 with Love at the 4, then you have like a Okoro or Wade at the 3, and like you said, they're both really good finishers, and the Cavs had a really good play going where, like, if it was Mobley at the top of the key or just Darius Garland at the top of the key, kicking the ball to Isaac Okoro, who's streaking along the baseline to the basket. Like, that's an easy play for the Cavs and an easy way to keep Okoro within the offensive rhythm of this team. And those are ways to get him looks at the bucket, especially if defenses don't respect him from the perimeter or if he's just not a good shooter to start the season and he's still trying to find his footing out there. And LeVert, in a sense, can capitalize off that too, because he does do well at the creating rim pressure. And like you said, Dean Wade is a pretty explosive finisher too. So like, that's an interesting lineup as well, where if the Cavs just want to go super big, and let's say they play, let's just say it's Mitchell at the point, and then you have like Okoro, Wade, Love, and Mobley, or you can slop somebody else in at the 2, whether that is like Haulun Neto or Ricky Rubio when he's healthy as well, whatever you want to do. But either way, like, there's a lot of interesting wrinkles in that lineup where it's a lot of pacing, spacing, and interior pressure, where the Cavs would certainly look a lot more balanced on both ends of the floor if they're able to kind of hit that apex where everything is just clicking on every cylinder.
Yeah, left for last year, for context, Mobley was 25.9% on catch and shoot threes, took 1.2 per game. So, like, he's done it. Interestingly, like for whatever reason, he took the most comfortable he was taking them was in the 7 to 15 range of the shot clock. That was at 34%, and that was like 5% of his overall shot profile, which is like over half of his catch and shoot volume. So I don't know if that means anything. It's just like one of these little random things. You look at the stats page and you kind of, okay, like, is it because he's in rhythm? Like, is it just like it's kind of a natural flow? Like, what does that look like? And like, if this is a swing skill for Mobley, it's not the most important one, but it, like, you could imagine them playing like Lamar Stevens with him easier if he can shoot, right? Like, and it just gives you more creativity. So this is part of it. Like, maybe Evan Mobley is part of this discussion too. Okay, one more break. Gonna come back and talk about just the depth, because I don't know personally if this depth is quote unquote rock solid. We'll talk about that after this. All right, last segment on Lockdown Cavs, Chris Manning, Evan Darrell. Evan, so I am higher on the depth than I think I've like seen it discussed. Let me say that first. I think like there are guys who I think I know things they're good at, things they are comfortable at. I think the thing is that there's just something we said at the top, at least I said. There are a lot of imperfect players. And while I think Mitchell eases some of these offensive concerns, I think you're still trying to figure out what wings you trust and who you don't. And because JB has said, he said this, you told me before we started recording, he had said this at Monday's practice, they want to maybe ideally play 10 guys. So is that more wings? Is that playing Rob? Like, what that even looks like kind of maybe tells us what they think of the, of these wing rotation, what they think of these guys. This is just like where if the Cavs depth kind of gets shaky and you don't trust it and the roster just feels a little lacking as we understand it, I think this is just where I look at it and say, okay, like, is this group really kind of where you want it to be? And I think there's reason of healthy skepticism that it's an ideal group at this point in time.
So it's an interesting spot the Cavs are in because, yeah, this wing rotation they have has some clear skills and needs the Cavs kind of have on this roster in terms of this wing depth, but they're flawed. It's not perfect. I think that's okay though, because they have the benefit of bringing in Donovan Mitchell. He is going to give them a huge shot in the arm offensively. And if you believe what he's saying, and if you're drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit, like, he gives you at least some type of effort on defense, or at least he's a respectable player. Like, there's something there for the Cavs. And like, I think that makes them a lot more balanced on both ends. And like, this is a point that I'm starting to like kind of like just think tank in my own head. Like, the Cavs could be a very balanced team this season and probably one of the most balanced teams in the league just on offense and defense if everything hits right. But again, what we talked about in the first segment, maybe you take Jetty Osman and you take Caris LeVert's contract and you combine those two with some future picks to go get a wing player that can just kind of completely answer your issue and make what is imperfect on your depth chart and your rotation just at the wing spot make a little bit more sense. Because right now the Cavs just have an overabundance of guards and an overabundance of big men and some questionable wings at certain spots, like Jetty Osman, questionable defensively. Isaac Coro, questionable offensively. Caris LeVert, questionable in terms of a perimeter threat and defensively. Like, there's a lot of issues here. Dean Wade isn't a three by trade. Neither is Lamar Stevens, but both of them are being taught to play the three at the NBA level. Like, Dylan Windler as well is a guy who we haven't really touched on much, is oft injured. Like, there's some flaws with each of these guys, but they also, in theory, answer a lot of the issues the Cavs have. It's just trying to find that happy spot. And like you said, now that JB kind of said, like, ideally the Cavs want to go 10 deep, maybe they do play, let's just say it's opening night, let's say it's Garland, Mitchell, Okoro, Mobley, Allen, with your bench being Love, LeVert, Neto, and at that point, and then you look at like Wade and then Osman or something like that, just so you have a little bit of extra wing support. And then maybe you kind of just flip flop a little bit. And that ninth and 10th guys just are more situational matchups too. Like, if you're playing Milwaukee, if you're playing Philly, like, that's where you see Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade get a little bit more shine. Same with Robin Lopez. Like, there's ways you can tinker this and kind of go with it. But I think I don't think the Cavs will take like a Patriots-esque approach where like they plan each game individually, because that's just not how the NBA works. Like the teams just kind of
there's not enough time. There's just like functionally not enough time in the day.
Functionally not enough practice time. Like the practices are going to be completely like cut in half by the time, even more than that, by the time the season really gets rolling. Like the Cavs will have a offensive system and defensive system, and yes, they will adapt it based on the matchups, of course. Like they aren't just going to go roll out there and lean completely on what works for them. Like they will be dynamic, not static in that regard, but the Cavs could also just deploy like every now and then, like, hey, this is a different matchup for us. Like we're facing Giannis Antetokounmpo today. Hey, we're going to put Dean Wade in the starting lineup and let him just be a bigger body to kind of slow him down, and then replicate a little bit of what you had last year with Ari Markkanen, where you just had so much length on 3 through 5 at the 3 through 5 spot that it's just a little bit more functional. And then you maybe go back to the drawing board and look elsewhere when you look at your next opponent like that, but maybe not so much flip-flopping. And then eventually you just find something that works, and you kind of iron out these kinks 15, 20, 25, 30 games into the season. And then hopefully by the All-Star break, you have a pretty clear idea of what you are as a team. And you also kind of have this tricky 3 spot figured out.
The last thing I think I at least feel like we can say on this is, this was obviously a need they felt they needed, a position group they needed to add to. This is why the Ochai Agbaji pick made sense. It's why, like, he is someone that like it's the kind of template of player you're looking for, I think, in future drafts. If there's like an Ochai Agbaji of the 2024 NBA draft, that's the kind of player the Cavs like might be looking to draft in that position a couple years from now.
It's also why they're linked to Jay Crowder in trade rumors too. Like, yeah, chemistry wise and mood wise, Jay Crowder could really rock the boat, but like what Jay Crowder could provide you helps you at the wing spot quite a bit.
The other component of that is, like, look, this is the reality of when you assemble a team at this level and you have Donovan Mitchell and you gave up stuff to get him, and you have Darius Garland and you have Evan, like, you've hit on certain things and you've not hit on others. And you're also just like, you've spent money in certain ways, right? This is just the reality, I think, you get into team building. Like, all of these teams that are trying to level up, like, every team in the NBA has something that you're just like, you can feel a little bit unsure about, right? Like, you look at like a team like Boston, for instance, like there's obviously other concerns going on there, but it's like, can Al Horford and Robert Williams, considering the age of Al Horford, the injury concerned with Robert Williams, like is that a big man rotation that's going to hold up? You know, you look at Miami, it's like, okay, like do they have the perimeter defense aside from Jimmy to really kind of handle some of these things? Like there are just, every team is going to have questions. And for the Cavs, I think it's just very particular. We look at if you look at point guard, you're like, Darius Garland's a descending all-star. Feel great about that. Donovan Mitchell, an in his prime all-star. Feel great about that. Evan Mobley might be the best player in this team in like 2 years and is a potential superstar. He's great. Jared Allen is like a very, very good center who was an all-star last year and is only 24 years old. Like, this is the spot on the floor because like the Okoro pick didn't work out perfectly because LeVert's kind of an interesting fit. Like Jetty's, you know, maybe just hasn't worked out the way the Cavs would hope. That this is the position group that just hasn't worked out totally, and that just kind of leads you to this spot where it's like, okay, let's just see who can prove it. Let's see who kind of figures out or doesn't, and what is that set up? What is the wings this year? Because like, LeVert's playing for a contract. He's in a contract year. Okoro was extension eligible after this year. Dylan Windler, the last year of his rookie contract. Jetty Osmond, the last year of his contract after this one, is a non-guaranteed year. And if he's not part of the plans, you can bet your bottom dollar they're probably just going to say bye-bye and like let him go and just go spend that money elsewhere. Yeah. All of these guys are also in flux, and that makes this just such like a, who fits into this as it's ascending before it's really, really at the idea, probably at the highest level it'll get to a year or 2 years from now. It makes it just such an interesting thing, I think, for us to track this year.
It really is. And to your point, like every team in the NBA, maybe except the Golden State Warriors, truly have like the Warriors, maybe it's the lack of depth on their team at some positions, but like they have a lot of young guys that are waiting in the wings too. But like the Warriors feel pretty close, at least, too perfect in terms of a starting 5, 1 through 5. And other than that, like every team has their flaws and their issues, and the Cavs are no exception to this. Like you said, like if you want to make a power move and become a serious player, especially in a very strong Eastern Conference, you got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet. And your omelet's Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Jared Allen, and Evan Mobley flavored, because not many teams have a pseudo big four on their roster. I see you making a Facebook my omelet comment, but
I just now want to know like what you're like, what's your go-to? You have like a go-to omelet?
So it's a confession time. I don't like eggs very much.
Wow.
Too many eggs, like in high school and in college, especially in college when I couldn't afford much food otherwise. So like to the point where like, it just makes my stomach feel a little sick sometimes, but like if it's served with breakfast, I'm not going to say no to it, but I'm also not like going out of my way to make eggs every day kind of thing. And like omelets to me can either be good or heavy. So people can flame me on Twitter in the comments below, but I, especially if you get to this point, but
I'm a big egg guy. So this is concerning. This is concerning for me.
Chris, Big Egg Manning is your new name.
Love an over easy, love a poached, love some scrambled, love an omelet of all kinds. You like love a Southwest omelet, maybe an omelet with some chicken breast in there, to up that protein number. Can't really go wrong.
That just feels like way too much chicken in one meal right there.
It's but just either way. All about them gains, brother.
Okay. As long as you're not like Eduardo Saverin and feeding chicken to the chicken in the common room. But either way, this Cavs team does have some issues at the wing spot. I think they will iron it out. And if push comes to shove, like I said with Justin Rowan when he was on the pod, this is a very patient Cavs organization. I don't think they're going to overreact. They have plenty to figure out between Mitchell and Garland already. And also just like what they have with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen as well to figure out that stuff. And then the wing stuff, yes, that is a concern. I would be remiss of them not to be focused on that as well. But to Chris's point, like these are all... this is a collection of talent that has their flaws individually, but they could maybe provide you something where in situational based matchups, like they could work for a little bit. And then maybe a player that isn't a jerk like Jay Crowder becomes available on the wing for the Cavs and they can kind of make a swing for it and buy low on them and just round out this 5-man rotation.
The Boss Man 99 Hive's going to come for your soul at some point.
You can buy his apparel online. It's all Boss Man 99 themed.
All caps, baby. All right, that's going to be it for today's episode of Locked On Cavs. We are going to be back tomorrow looking at the ahead to the Cavs' first preseason game against the Philadelphia 76ers and analyze what we're going to be watching for in that game. Hope you tune in for that one. Again, thanks for making us your first listen every day. This episode was produced by the indomitable Jake Stevens. Now make your second listen, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, where Josh Lloyd hosts the number one daily fantasy basketball show on the entire planet. Wow. It's free and available wherever you get your podcast. Again, go support your Cleveland Joes as well. Locked On Guardians, because the playoffs are about to get started. Locked On Browns with G. Bush and Jeff Lloyd. And check out the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show as well. And if you're an Ohio State person, we got Locked On Buckeyes for you too. All right, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Everyone, be well. Stay hydrated.